For KOSU News, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time once again for This Week in Oklahoma Politics with ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel and Republican political consultant Neva Hill. Well, the U.S. Supreme Court is following through with a request by Attorney General Scott Pruitt to stay the execution of Richard Glossop. AG Pruitt is usually pushing executions forward, even calling the use of the drug under consideration by the high court constitutional. Neva, was it unusual for Pruitt to call for this stay?
Well, I think it was a correct move, and I think what he wanted and what he said was that we need to get some firm resolution by the high court on the use of this particular drug that is in question. So it's not a change in his position on the use of death penalty in Oklahoma, but it is something, and he did point out the fact that Governor Fallon has the authority only to delay a lethal injection for 60 days. So I think that was another component in the mix on this. But the one sentence order basically just sets the stage for them to come make their arguments in April, and I think by hopefully midsummer we'll have some real resolution on this.
Ryan, what are your thoughts?
No, I applaud the Attorney General for making this request of a stay. I only wish it would have come sooner before we had two executions where we experimented on human beings using this drug combination. The use of midazolam is not used by anesthesiologists for general anesthetic purposes. You know, the Department of Corrections, as we've now learned, whenever they were looking for their medical information on whether or not they should even use this drug, you know, they went to websites like drugs.com. They were literally Googling this stuff and making it up as they went along. You know, that's very troubling. And so on top of that, then we add this paralytic drug, which would even mask whether or not the individual is under a state of sedation. So there are serious problems with this. I recently read this New York Times editorial that I think puts it all into a bigger perspective, though, and that is that it won't be that long into the future that we'll look back and we'll say, how is it that in 2015 we were still debating whether humane ways to kill people, to intentionally kill people, because at the end of the day, there's just no humane way to do this.
But let's remember that the Supreme Court has said that executions like this have not violated the Eighth Amendment. In fact, the 2008 case in Kentucky specifically used the three drugs, this particular protocol, in that particular execution. So I think what Attorney General Pruitt has said is that he does not expect that there to be a change in the outcome, but he wants it to be, you know, put forward so that we can get some resolution to this, hopefully once and for all.
But the drug combination that we're using today is different than the drug combination that that the court reviewed in the Bayes case. You know, that, you know, so we're looking at a new drug combination, and I think that when you have four members of the Supreme Court that weighed in at the last minute request for a stay on this last execution, Justice Sotomayor's opinion, she was deeply troubled and disturbed by moving forward with this experimental drug combination without knowing what's going to happen.
New State Superintendent Joy Hoffmeister hit the ground running with requesting more money from the legislature. She put forth her plan to raise teacher pay by $5,000 and add 5 days to the school year over the next 5 years. The first year could cost about $150 million. Ryan, do you see any hope in Hoffmeister getting what she wants?
Yeah, I think that the new superintendent has this is a solid plan. She's realistic and understanding that, you know, it's going to take 5 years to get to where she hopes Oklahoma educators and education need to be with regard to especially funding, but in particular with teacher pay. So the $150 million increase this year, you know, could be doable. There's a chance that they could use one-time funds. I think that that's a terrible idea to think that we should continue to rely on one-time funding like we did last year. We're around $400 million now. This year, thinking maybe we could plug budget holes with $1 billion of one-time funding. You know, that does not project a real long-term plan. But there may be a path to pay for this year, and then, you know, some additional revenues coming in next year to fund it up. So I think it's a realistic plan. It's a certainly necessary and needed plan. But in the long term, we've got to figure out how we pay for this without robbing other state services that are already decrepit.
Neva, do you think she's got a chance?
Well, I think it'll be what the will of the legislature is in this instance. And this $205 million budget increase that she's asking for, when we know that there's a shortfall and we know that there's so much pressure on the budget, I think it gets to really comes down the line to the notion of, are we going to elevate teacher pay to the regional average? Are we going to put a plan in place and move forward? This is not a new idea. We've been talking about this for years now, the need for this. And no one wants to be at the bottom and have only Mississippi and South Dakota have lower average teacher pay than Oklahoma teachers. But I think it does start the dialogue. I think that Superintendent Hoffmeister has put a plan forward and stepped up and said, I want to be part of this legislative process and dialogue. And that's what it's going to take. It's going to take some compromise. It's going to take give and take. And hopefully it'll be an environment this year where they can, you know, see some real results.
And I think she's got some political capital. I mean, you know, she's come into office with an extraordinary political victory at her back. And I think that legislators, especially those, you know, they ought to look at her poll results in the primary and in the general election to see how well she did in their districts. Because I think that the political capital that she amassed over this last campaign will serve her well this legislative session.
Well, let me ask you, because we're talking about giving teachers a raise, but we're also asking them to work more days, more hours. It'd be like, I don't know if that's necessarily a raise. If I went in and asked my boss for a raise, he says, okay, but you have to work weekends.
Mm-hmm.
Is that necessarily a raise?
Yeah, it's certainly not the best case scenario, but I think that the superintendent has a realistic understanding of the political landscape of the Capitol. And if you're going to ask for an additional $150 million from the legislature this year with outlays over the next 4 years that would ratchet that up even more, you've got to have something there.
And I think what they're talking about is increasing the number of days of instruction to the national average. So again, I mean, they're trying to tie some of this together so that it's not just all about money, but it's all about the broader picture of, you know, how are we going to improve education and at the same time do right by teachers.
Going on to last Thursday was the bill filing deadline. By the time the dust settled, there were about 1,200 from the House and more than 800 from the Senate. Neva, let's start with you. Are there any bills which piqued your interest?
Well, I think at the beginning of every session, it's more about just the kind of sifting through everyone's notion of every possibility that you can possibly throw out there on the table. My hope is that they will very quickly dispatch many of these bills that don't have much hope. They're either going to be killed in the House, you know, or the Senate. They're not going to get a very long kind of day of processing through the legislature and get to the real issues. And I think these are the ones that they don't want to tackle that we talk about all the time. I think they need to get into the weeds and get into the budget and get into really talking about some, instead of talking reform, they're going to have to really start putting some pencil to paper and doing something about it. And I think, you know, I think all of the sensational headlines, let's get past them. Some of these votes that need to be up or down votes, like perhaps the Indian Cultural Museum, get it on the table, let them take a vote and get it off rather than just have it mire down the whole process for, you know, months on end through the legislative session.
Ryan, any bills you're looking at?
Yeah, some of my favorites at this point are, you know, Senator Holt has an entire range of election reform legislation out there. Online voter registration, changing the way that we operate our primary system, increasing the ability for independents to participate in our political system. You know, independents, one of the largest growing portions of the electorate right now, and I think it's only going to get larger. We've seen that at a national scale. I believe it's going to happen in Oklahoma as well. And so I think that those are very important reforms. Will all of them pass the session? Probably not. But even if we can get some of them, one of the best things that I think we could do for the state of Oklahoma isn't necessarily what we do at the Capitol, but figuring out how the folks that are at the Capitol get there, and they represent a larger group of individuals than just very small, narrow pieces of the electorate that they campaign to in these primaries. And then Senator Vice has the High Point refrigerated beer legislation. And I got to tell you, if that passes and I can go buy New Belgium products, including Fat Tire beer, at my local liquor store, I'm going to be pretty happy about that.
I do want to ask, because some of these bills, we've got some that might actually change the way the legislature sits. Unicameral legislation or budget every 2 years and only substantive issues every 2 years. Do you think this year is the one where we could actually see something completely different?
I think we may see some real hard discussions about it. I think the budget every 2 years, I would like to see that change. I've always thought that that was the direction that, that the legislature needed to go, because it does put the focus where it needs to be, and it kind of it takes away the temptation to just get off on tangents and other directions that make good headlines but don't have anything about good public policy. So I hope they get serious about it. They've got the perfect backdrop to do it, and they've got Republicans. This is kind of one of those opportunities to really put up or shut up about it. So I'm optimistic that maybe they'll move forward on it.
You know, that's something that whenever I was when I was in the legislature, I pushed for the every other year budget cycle session, and I think that you know, having been through legislative sessions and watched budgets put together, or you know, more accurately, not watched them put together, because you know, right now the way the budget process works is that you have a handful of folks, and when I say a handful, I mean you can literally count them on one hand, from the governor's office, the speaker's office, and the Senate President Pro Tem's office, who get together and throughout the legislative session hammer out a budget. Most legislators only see this budget for about 24 hours at most, and they're trying to make heads or tails of it, and they just can't. And so they vote up or down and then figure out what happens, you know, sometime in August or September, whenever their constituents that are depending on these state funds call them up and say they're either here or they're not.
And it's compounded by agency directors that are not elected, that are, you know, really in a place to really do a lot with these dollars that are getting appropriated with very little oversight. I mean, I think that's one of the issues. I mean, the legislature is going to have to take responsibility for saying, I mean, if the dollars aren't there, here's what we're going to do about it, and really force these agencies to do what they will not do unless it's really mandated and dictated to them, and that is make change.
Late last week, Finance Secretary Preston Dorflinger was arrested on a complaint of operating a vehicle under the influence of alcohol. He since apologized for his actions, and Governor Fallon is keeping him in his cabinet-level position. Ryan, do you agree with her decision?
Absolutely. You know, I think that you know, all of us make mistakes. Sometimes the mistakes are worse than others. You know, if there's any lesson to be learned from this, you know, Secretary Dorflinger is going to go through the criminal justice process, and he's going to go through a process that for most Oklahomans would completely dismantle their lives. You know, the fines and fees, the cost of attorneys, having to leave work to, you know, be able to attend court hearings, all of these things that he's going to be able to do with a great deal more convenience than the average Oklahoman. Those ought to be lessons that the governor's office and his and the administration through him can learn. You know, these things can literally bankrupt families, and is that really the purpose of our criminal justice system? Is that the way that we teach people to learn from their mistakes?
Neva.
Well, I think, first of all, it was refreshing that you had someone really kind of own up to the mistake right up front and say, look, I'm sorry for the embarrassment. He apologized to the governor accepted it. I mean, he has been someone who's been a major player person in the Fallon administration, somebody that I think is respected for his professional abilities. And yes, I mean, like Ryan said, mistakes are made, I think by going through this process, it's been transparent and above board, and I think that is really all that we should expect out of a situation like this.
There we go. Ryan Neva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.